The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of Straight Talk Money. I'm Peggy Tuck along with Chase Robertson, and we are so happy today because we have a wonderful guest going to be joining us. He's the Chief Investment Strategist of U.S. Equity Strategy for CFRA. He serves as analyst, publisher, and communicator of S&P's Outlooks for the Economy, Market, and Sectors. He is also the author of the Standard & Poor's Guide to Sector Investing and the Seven Rules of Wall Street. And in addition, he also writes a weekly investment piece featured on S&P Global Market Intelligence's Market Scope Advisor platform. His work is also found in the flagship weekly newsletter, The Outlook, and he's our guest today. Good morning, Sam Stovall.
Good morning, Peggy and Chase. Good to talk to you again.
Always great to have you back. Well, I have to ask you right off the bat, what did you think of the president's speech last night?
Well, I thought it was very good. First off, a very conciliatory tone, reaching across the aisle, not being the bombastic campaigner that he was in prior speeches. He was still a little bit light on details as to how he's going to accomplish all of these miracles that he keeps mentioning will occur. But it appears as if Wall Street is simply happy with the fact that we're going to let Congress work out the details, but we're still headed in the right direction.
I agree. And speaking of miracles, Sam, I mean, do you think that, you know, some of the higher level points that he's pointed out, you know, are too ambitious to get achieved in a single term? I mean, you know, I think a middle class tax cut is pretty achievable. I do think putting $1 trillion of actual capital to work in infrastructure is ambitious. What are your thoughts around that?
Oh, I agree with that, because you have a very conservative Congress who is still working under the sequestration mindset. For every $1 you want to add, they would like to then take away $2, because we are anywhere from 80 to 100% debt to GDP here in the U.S., and so as a result, we're just carrying too much debt. It's just something that we have to undo in order for our economy to grow. We had GDP up 1.9% in the most recent report, certainly a lot weaker than the quarter before, nowhere near the 3 to 4% that the Trump administration appears to be promising. I think that we'll be happy if we get out of the terrible twos.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you could have said it better about a divided Congress. Literally, when you saw the crowd last night, half of them were standing and clapping. The other ones were sitting there, looking like they'd rather be poked with a cattle prod than be sitting there listening to Trump blab.
And I'm not sure which takes longer, the speech because of all the interrupting clapping or Major League Baseball these days.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I always find it interesting how the other side votes for the captain of everybody's airplane to go down.
Oh!
I mean, that's basically, well, if you're voting against the president to fail, I mean, that's basically what that is.
So, but now, overall, Sam, you're pretty positive on the market. And, you know, Warren Buffett's come out. He's feeling really positive. David Tepper came out, you know. And you're feeling rather bullish on 2017 as well.
Well, we do have a recommended 65% exposure to equities, which is a little higher than our normal balanced approach, mainly because we think you're better off being neutral in the U.S. and there are greater investment opportunities overseas, because nobody wants to be overseas at this point. But I feel that what's happening right now is that prices lead fundamentals. The fundamentals are saying we could be seeing 11 to 12% earnings growth, but the prices are indicating that investors are expecting earnings to be up 20-25% should we get a tax cut that brings the effective rate from the mid to high 30% area down to the mid to low 20% area. So it's really a wait and see kind of approach. But if you look at fundamentals right now, we are overvalued. But if you look at price trajectory and what that might be telling us about future fundamental growth, that's implying that we are underestimating what will likely happen.
And traditionally, I mean, look at what a difference a year has made. Look at January and February 2016 as compared to this year.
Oh, very good point. January and February of last year, both months were in negative territory. We were down 10.5% through February 11th of last year, the worst opening of any year since the Great Depression. But the investors said, you know what, let's use this more as an opportunity rather than something to run from. And because of the unanticipated events, whether it be Brexit, whether it be the election, as well as the expectation that economic growth could be stimulated, the market has continued to work its way higher to the point where we are now 20% above where we were on year 7 of this bull market, March 9th of 2016. And I think investors are just wondering, how high can we go?
Yeah, I mean, Sam, do you think, you know, because stocks typically, you know, don't do as well in the first year, first term of Republican presidents, do you think the Trump administration might be the first administration to break that streak?
It's certainly a possibility. First off, you have a pretty small set of observations. You've only had 5 Republican presidents since World War II, and you're absolutely right that the market itself has declined about 3% on average during the first year of a Republican's first term in office, and we've had the market fall 4 of 5 times. In addition, if you want to throw in an additional bit of negative news, every Republican president since Teddy Roosevelt, since 1901, has experienced a recession in their first term in office, with everybody but Warren G. Harding having it happen in their first 2 years in office. So, and with us now being 92 months into this economic expansion, or twice as long as the average since 1900, you could be humming a song by Brooke Benton called It's Just a Matter of Time.
And Sam, I'm going to have you back for our President's Day show because we release a lot of facts. You know, I'm curious, you know, you work with the S&P. You know, I worked with the S&P in regrading a lot of debt for a publicly traded bank. And, you know, I noticed in some of your projections, your suggested allocation is 35% to fixed income, but you note that, you know, bond prices will be under pressure due to rising interest rates. Do you see a lot of changes in the S&P ratings as rates go up, or do you think that cash flow and credit quality, you know, will kind of stay in the same range, you know, within the next, let's say, 25 or 50 basis points worth of hikes?
Well, interesting question. First off, on October 1st of last year, S&P Global decided after 166 years to get out of the equity research business and sold the equity research department, of which I'm a member, to CFRA, an independent research firm that's been around for the past 30 years. But when I was employed by S&P, which was almost 28 years, I keep wondering, gee, is 28 years a felony or a misdemeanor? I was there 28 years, and we were always encouraged, don't talk to the fixed income side. Don't talk to the debt rating side, because they are traditionally privy to information that would be regarded as inside information on the equity side. So
sure,
we never had any contact with them whatsoever because we just didn't want to go there.
Gotcha. All right, folks, stay with us. Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist for CFRA. We'll be right back after these important messages.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. We've got Sam Stovall on the phone, and he is the Chief Investment Strategist of U.S. Equity Strategy for CFRA. You all know him for many, many years from the S&P. So welcome back, Sam.
Oh, happy to be here, Peggy and Chase.
Well, what do you think of the Dow hitting 21,000?
Well, I think it's pretty amazing. We hit 19,000 on November 22nd. And rather than experiencing a digestion of gains, as we have traditionally done at every millennial level since hitting 10,000 back in the late 1990s, we then went and captured the 20,000 level, and here we are at the 21,000 level. So this is the first time since 1999 that we have gone 3,000 points without digesting the gains. And what was interesting for those who are a bit nervous out there, only twice did we go 2,000 points without digesting the gains, and that was back in 99 and 2007. And you know what happened after that.
Now, the rally does just keep continuing, and I keep visualizing this huge hot air balloon that keeps going up to, you know, up and up and up. And, I mean, are we seeing those resistance levels fading because the rally just keeps going?
Well, I'm glad you're talking about the market and not calling me hot air. Yes, I mean, we're in new high territory. We're in uncharted territory. So there really is no resistance for us to break through because we've never been here before. Actually, the only resistance comes from measured moves, comes from Fibonacci retracement levels, et cetera. So from a technical perspective, you know, in a sense, the sky is the limit. However, we all know that trees do not grow to the sky. And so as a result, you know, we can't say that this is going to last forever. It's just a matter of time before we actually do start to digest some of these gains.
Interesting. So back to the digestion of gains, Sam. You know, can you explain? I mean, is there almost a definition of exactly what that means, or what our listeners can be looking for, and
yes,
tie that back to that thought process?
Sure. Well, when I say digestion of gains, what I mean is that we have a meaningful decline that takes place. I'm not talking about 1% up to 4%, which I simply call noise, but rather 5% to 10%, which is what we call a pullback, 10
sure.
to 20%, which we call a correction, or 20% plus, which we call a bear market. Now, nobody knows for sure when these are going to occur, but quite frankly, pullbacks occur quite frequently, usually about one per year, corrections about once every 18 months. The most interesting thing, however, is the speed with which the market gets back to break even after hitting these declines. Mm-hmm. It's taken, on average, only 2 months to get back to break even after falling anywhere from 5 to 10%, and only 4 months to get back to break even after declining up to 20%. We were down 14% from May of 2015 through early February of 2016. We got back to break even 5 months later. Some people said, well, it took us longer than it normally does. And I said, people were saying we got there too quickly. And I said, no, it actually took a month longer than it normally does. You would be surprised as to how quickly the market takes advantage of opportunities when investors panic and just start throwing out stocks without looking at the underlying fundamentals.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really important point, folks, that Sam is making. You know, one of the things that we're tracking here at Robertson Wealth Management is how much money is flooding into the market every time there is a pullback. And that's one of the reasons why we think the bull market is going to last throughout the rest of the year, is that literally every time the market dips two or three times, a lot of money is floating in, and we see even more money from the institutional and professional investor side just sitting on the sidelines ready to go. And, you know, as long as you have that buying, you know, the market will continue to increase. So, Sam, I appreciate you bringing that point up. You're kind of reiterating what we talk about on the show.
Well, I think just by listening to the number of people out there who are saying, oh, I'm going to wait until we get a correction and I'll buy back in, with that kind of a mindset, that implies one of two things, that we just don't get a pullback in which people buy in, and then we start experiencing what I call a FOMO mindset, fear of missing out. People throw money at the market,
sure.
And then once everybody is now fully invested, then the market falls from its own weight, and instead of declining 5 to 10%, it'll probably go down 10 to 20 plus.
Sam, we had a report come out this morning on inflation, and then, of course, we've got Fed Chair Janet Yellen going to be speaking out on Friday, and we have some other, you know, the Fed governors have been speaking out as well here recently. Do you think that given the mark on inflation and how well the economy is doing and the market seem to be doing, that we're looking at a March rate hike?
Yes, I think that there is a likelihood that we'll have a March rate hike. My feeling is that the Fed does not want to get behind the curve. I think they feel at this point that they might be. The market is expecting them to raise rates 2, 3, maybe even 4 times this year. And I don't really see any reason why they would want to wait. The one reason could be because we don't have inflation reaching their target level at 2% or higher based on the personal consumption expenditure, PCE, that they typically look to. So my feeling is that that's the one fly in the ointment. But otherwise, I think Wall Street would be disappointed if they don't raise rates.
Yeah, I mean, one of my concerns, Sam, around a rate hike in the floating category or the non-fixed is, you know, in a past life, I was an investment banker, and there are a lot of operating companies in the middle market that only debt service, that only have what I would call, you know, credit quality balance sheets with these low rates. You know, a hundred basis point rise in a revolving line of credit for most middle America companies would throw some covenants. And you know, my question is that has the cheap money all these years, you know, created these kind of what I would call artificial companies that couldn't stand a real correction?
Well, that's certainly a possibility. Not an area that I get too deeply involved with. I do know that a lot of companies have been borrowing because rates are so low. They've been using that borrowing in order to buy back shares, in order to boost their own earnings per share, as well as engage in increased dividend payments, not necessarily guaranteeing a rate increase, but rather offering special dividends at the end of every year. So
sure,
that is definitely something that they will have to address once rates start to rise.
Yeah, I know. I think the leverage recap is a dangerous game for a lot of companies. So, you know, one of our investment theses is, you know, the focus of cash flow and dividends here at Robertson Wealth Management. So we're always tracking, you know, at what point do companies cash flow, at what companies cash flow. Anyway, folks, stay with us. Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, Sam Stovall. We'll be right back after these important announcements.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. Welcome back, everybody, to one final segment of the Wednesday edition of Straight Talk Money. We've got Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist of U.S. Equity Strategy at CFRA. You know him from the S&P. Hey, by the way, if you'd like to follow him on Twitter, it's at Stovall with 2 L's, CFRA, at Stovall, CFRA, if you'd like to follow him on Twitter. Sam, we've got you for a couple more questions here, and then I know we have to let you go. You're a busy guy. But in your outlook for 2017, one of the areas that you were looking was actually outside of our borders, and we have talked several times on the show about how the European economy is growing a little bit faster than the U.S. economy. And so are you liking foreign equities right now?
Yes, Peggy, I am. If you look at a rolling 10-year compound rate of growth for the MSCI EFA, which is the index of developed international companies, it is rivaling its all-time low of February 2009. In the last 9 years, the MSCI EFA has underperformed the S&P 500 7 times, and the 2 times that it beat it, it did so only marginally. So it's a reversion to the mean kind of scenario. If you even look at it on a relative strength basis, on a rolling 5-year basis, both the MSCI EFA, the developed markets, as well as the emerging markets are trading at one standard deviation below the mean, or therefore at very low performance levels relative to history. If you look at the fundamentals, we're looking at earnings growth in 2017 of anywhere from 21 to 49% for frontier markets, emerging markets, developed international markets, versus 10, 11% growth for large and mid-cap stocks, and about 18% for small cap here in the U.S. P.E. ratios are much more attractive overseas, and dividend yields are at least 50% higher overseas than they are here in the U.S. So, you know, it's not a trading suggestion, but rather an idea that investors might want to take a look at overseas markets because, as Willie Keeler once said, you hit them where they ain't, and right now they ain't overseas.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some important points that Sam is making, folks. So, you know, a low PE ratio. You know, you look at stocks here in the U.S. They trade anywhere from 5 to, I think, Kinder Morgan trades at 68 times. Let's see, 86 times on a trailing 12-month price to earnings ratio. You know, the value is found in lower ones, and then of course dividends. You know, we like dividends at Robertson Wealth Management. It's a core part of our thesis on taking the dividend and either reinvesting it or taking the dividend and reinvesting it in the stock that's producing the dividend or reinvesting it into another asset class, but that creates a compounding growth effect for your portfolio. Sam, I'm curious, you know, reading through your most recent report, you note underweighting energy and overweighting the S&P 500. Can you speak to a little bit more about how you guys got to those statements?
Sure. Well, we have a market weight recommendation for the market as a whole, overweight for stocks, because of our overweight recommendation in international. We have a positive outlook for materials, which traditionally has a relatively high correlation with energy. But our belief is that the supply-demand imbalance remains. Once we start to see oil prices creep their way back up to $60 a barrel, that you're going to see a lot of these swing producers, Bakken Shale, et cetera, really just start to pump once again. And with economic growth ending up being at 1.9%, not the, the 2, 3, even 4% that is being touted about in terms of forecasts, our belief is that while you don't necessarily want to be selling your energy holdings, we believe that it will be underperforming the S&P 500, primarily because the cyclical sectors, industrials, financials, materials, et cetera, are going to be getting the bigger boost coming from the tax holiday repatriation of foreign earnings combined with the expectation that we could be seeing infrastructure spending and reduction in regulations benefit some of these other sectors. So our feeling is it's more a matter of which is going to do better, and our belief it's the cyclical sectors over the defensives as well as the stray cats, which we like to call energy.
Sure, sure. And Sam, I'd like to thank you again for coming on the show. I know that you have a meeting in a few minutes, so thank you so much. We really appreciate your time and your insight this morning, and we'd love to have you back soon.
Well, it's my pleasure, Chase and Peggy. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much. And again, folks, you can follow Sam on Twitter at Stovall, S-F-R-A. And Sam, have a great day.
Thanks, Peggy. Bye.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.